Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Coe back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every last second of game tape for Sunday's matchup.
Who's your connection?
You sound like a cop to me.
Who's your connection?
Enter Vinny's Film Room on 105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Woman crush Wednesday. Ravens back on the practice field today. Getting ready for the Raiders. Home opener coming up 1 o'clock. M&T Bank Stadium. Ravens laying a strong 9.5. Against Gardner Minshew and his boys. Hey, Minshew won here last year, so let's not pop off too much. We'll do our picks later in the week. But the Ravens did lose their opener, 27-20 to Kansas City. Let's start with the offense as Vinny breaks it down, film study.
Yeah, let's break this down. What I'm going to do to start with, I'll break each guy down individually, how I thought they played and everything. I mean, let's start with the wide receivers. Zay Flowers. And kind of what we talked about early on, you know, he wasn't a big participant in the action during training camp. And we said that'll change once the season starts. And it did, of course, because they want to get him. He's a playmaker and they want to get him the football. And he made plays. He ran good routes. And I thought he had a good game. I thought Zay played well. He made play. He tried to make plays after the catch. And his big thing is making people miss. And that's what they try to do with him, is get him in those opportunities. Bateman, he got overthrown twice. The only thing is, on the one, I just didn't like the body language after. It was just like, it almost looked like, here we go. Because he puts his arms down, drops his head, and it just looks like, I go, oh my God, come on. And then he made the phenomenal catch on that last drive. I mean, he caught half the ball, and it was an adjusted route and stuff. So he made a hell of a play, and I think that will take him big into the next game. Now, you know, they were talking about also that second to last play of the game where they said, you know, that Lamar said that I was looking at Bateman. I mean, and I showed you the film, Bob. I mean, Bateman was running across, unless, you know, he thought he was going to go straight down the middle of the goalpost, basically. But that's not reality, because Zay Flowers is coming in right, but they'd have ran into each other. So I don't see that being the case, you know, Bate ran a real nice route on that one dig route that he caught, and he was open on another one of those. He runs those extremely well because he's got phenomenal body control, as we saw on that deep catch. Aguilar really wasn't, to me, the biggest thing with Aguilar was when Lamar was yelling at him on the sidelines, and I'm guessing they thought they were in man coverage on that play. Now, let's talk O-line. Ronnie Stanley, pleasantly surprised. He showed anchor ability, showed athleticism, thought he did a nice job in the run game reaching the outside and getting his head on the outside, and I thought fundamentally played pretty good. So I mean, that's a huge, as Joe Gibbs would be, huge thumbs up to Ronnie Stanley for that game. I mean, he was impressed. I didn't think he would be able to do that. He did it. So congratulations, Ronnie. Although all the penalties, you know, I mean, like we talked about the other, you're Notre Dame graduate, man. After they've called you, like they've warned you and called you, you should move up a little bit.
Yeah, but Harbsy said he had a chip in his shoulder pad, which says that he was aligned properly.
All right, but the ref wasn't looking
disagreed
at the chip.
Yeah.
Right. All right, Voorhees, inconsistent. You know, first game in a couple years. So, first real game where they're stunting, twisting, and you're playing against starters. He had his ups and downs, let's say. But the thing that you liked as the game went on, fundamentally, he's going to get better because his fundamentals are good. When he gets in trouble is when he lunges in pass or he lunges in the run. And then what happens? The guy swims right around him because your head's down. Guess what? You're going down. And if when he stays back and he does his techniques properly, and we heard Harv's talk about it earlier, when they do their fundamentals properly, he does a good job. He does a good job. And that's why I think he's going to get – I have a lot of faith in that left side of the line now. But he's still going to have his issues. That's the only thing. Now, Lindenbaum, I thought Lindenbaum – he had his inconsistent – Lindenbaum's always – you know, he's 295 pounds or 300 maybe. But he's going to have problems with big, powerful guys. And he does. I mean, when he's one-on-one with those big, powerful guys, he's going to have some problems. And he gave up some pressures to Lamar. But as a whole, does a pretty decent job. But in that situation, he had some problems. But he hadn't played a game or done anything with pads on since April the 2nd. So for his first game back, pretty good. Filele is the one that scares me a little bit. I mean, pass protection, he got... I mean, when he whiffs, and it's quick. It's a quick whiff. You know, I mean, Jones was back there a couple times. What Filele does a nice job of is when he gets those big hogs that are just rushing and they just want to dance, he can do that. He can just sit there and dance. He does a decent job on the down block when he's blocking. He's the right guard. When the guy is lined up inside him, the defensive lineman is lined up inside him, and he's blocking down, and he just got to get that 380 pounds on him, he does a decent job at that. He just doesn't sustain blocks. That's the big problem. You know, like, he may try to reach a guy, like if they're trying to run outside, and we've talked about this before, and what happens to him is he just stops. You know, he just stops and watches, you know. So we will finish the rest of the offensive line and the rest of the offense after the break.
We got Whip Around next. Then we got the AFC North report. We got plenty of time. We get news from the Nets. We'll finish the offense, and then we'll get to the defense film breakdown at 12:45. They gave up 27 points. There was a breakdown in the fourth quarter in a pass situation where Worthy got behind Marlon Humphrey. What happened in that, you'll find out later in the show. But when we come back, it's the Whip Around. What happened in the world of sports last night? We'll let you know. And what happened historically with both the Ravens and the Orioles at September 11th, and there was a sad passing in Baltimore sports lore.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Kell, back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week, and man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need. Season-long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll get to that as well.
Vinny and Hades whip.
Brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County.
105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Hades, 105.7 The Fan. Time for the Whip Around here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. News from the Nets, top of the hour. Get back to Vinny's film breakdown of the Ravens offense. But NFL ratings for week one, 21 million viewers per game.
Damn.
Which set a broadcasting record, and I'm not smart enough to figure out how to tabulate these sorts of things, because now you can watch games on streaming platforms. For instance, when I'm sitting outside on a Sunday afternoon, I've got, like, streaming. I'm not on the traditional network television. I'm streaming through my Fire Stick or Roku, whatever it is. But I guess they could tabulate them. 21 million per game. So I guess, on average, 21 million-ish people or close to it watch the Bears and the Tennessee Titans. I don't get it, quite frankly. I didn't know all those people were doing it, but per game. And it's ratings record.
Was the largest the Ravens Chiefs game? They were like 24.
Highest rated Monday night game in forever. Or Thursday night game.
Yeah. And then I think, well, Friday, they've never had a Friday game before, I don't think, right? So, I mean, that, and you got the Packers and Eagles, so you got two big. And other than high school football, there's nothing on.
And that Dallas-Cleveland game had a phenomenal rating as well, because you have the Cowboys and all their bandwagon fans. Almost 24 million people on average watch that game.
And that was Brady's first game.
It probably boosts, you know, the rate. But 21 million per game, how about that?
That's crazy.
Week two starts tomorrow with Buffalo against Miami. So, good job there. Maryland's at Virginia, as we just talked about. Damon Evans last hour. Terps laying 2.5. Over-under is 57.5. Cavaliers are 2-0. But as we talked about with Jeff Ehrman a couple of days ago, Maryland's rebuild. Maryland's not in a rebuild. It's 6 years in Mike Locksley. They should be cemented as a team competing for higher stuff. Virginia is still in a rebuild phase. Remember the horrible tragedy. Players were murdered on a bus a couple years ago, which, you know, whatever. But a terrible, terrible thing. Maryland loses this game. It could be a nasty end to the season, and we're only three games into it.
I mean, if they have a bad year, Bob, do they lose some of those four
stars? Perhaps. Or even studs that you have on the current roster.
That's true, too.
Like, hey, man, what, you want to go to the mayonnaise bowl or the whatever? Or do you want to, you know, play for, you know, bigger goals here? But we'll see. Tough loss. But you take care of Virginia. You take care of Villanova. Then you're 3-1. And then conference play really starts to roll. And
you know. But they lost to one of the worst Big Ten teams.
Yeah. That's at home as 9.5-point favorites. We'll see how they regroup. Improvise and adapt. That's all you can do. It's the whip around. September 11th, 2024. This day in sports history. How about at Riverfront Stadium, 1985? Pete Rose, single off of Eric Schau, broke Ty Cobb's record. 41-92, all-time hits leader in the history of Major League Baseball. Pete Rose finished with 4,256.
Weren't they breaking in all the time to show that?
Sure. Yeah. It was a line drive to left center field. Schaub no longer with us. You remember the Padres were the defending National League champions in 85 as they went to the World Series 84. But Pete Rose, as we know, banned from baseball, admitted to betting on baseball after denying for years and years and years. Pete Rose now 83 years old. Think about it. You got the all-time home run leader, the guy who won more Cy Youngs than anyone, and the all-time hits leader, and they're not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
There you go. But Mariano Rivera got 100% of the vote. And Ken Griffey Jr. did. I mean, I don't know. Who are these people? I don't get it. Anyway, Orioles history, 1973. Memorial Stadium. Brooksy! Three-run homer. Al Bumbry, who was going to be the American League Rookie of the Year. 4-for-5 with a run and a ribby. Dave McNally picked up his 16th win. 8-3 Orioles over the Red Sox. Orioles would win the American League East that year. 1983, Yankee Stadium. Todd Cruz and the Demper had two ribbies each. Flanny picked up his 11th win. Tippy 17th save. 5-3 Orioles on their way to the World Championship. 2012, Nolan, you were alive. Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Orioles taking on the Rays. How about J.J. Hardy going deep twice? Chris Davis going deep. And Steve Johnson, Dave's son, got the win in relief of Jason Hamill. Orioles 9-2 on their way to the wild card. Made it to the divisional round because they beat Texas in the wild card game. 2023, a year ago today against the Cardinals. Cedric Mullins, who hit two home runs last night, which we'll talk about with Rich Dubroff later in the show. Hit a grand slam on this night. How about Gunnar Henderson, 3-for-5 with a homer. D.L. Hall got the win as the Orioles blow out the Cards 11-5. Ravens history, 2011 at Pittsburgh. Ravens 35-7, season opener of the Steelers. Joe Flacco, 17 of 29. Three touchdowns. Ray Rice, Anquan Boldin, Ed Dixon. Beneficiaries there. T. Sizzles had three sacks, 35-7. See ya, wouldn't want to be ya. 10 years ago today, M&T Bank Stadium against the Steelers again. But Owen Daniels catching two touchdown passes.
Nice.
Forgot all about him from Joe Flacco. Justin Tucker kicked four field goals. And Elvis Dumervil had two sacks as the Ravens blow out the Steelers 26-6. And as we talk about September 11th, we're honoring the fallen. of that horrific day in New York, Pennsylvania, at the Pentagon, for the country and for the world, quite frankly. 2011, 2002, we lost a legend here in Baltimore.
Both teams battling to stay in the Western Conference race. John Unitas, looking deep and throwing deep for John Mackey, wide open. He's on his way for an 89-yard touchdown run.
Johnny Unitas threw two touchdown passes to John Mackey on that Sunday afternoon as the Baltimore Colts beat the L.A. Rams in that 17-3. Head coaches for that game, by the way, Don Shula and George Allen.
Whoa.
Talk about some Hall of Fame oomph on that. Both teams littered with Hall of Famers. But John Unitas passed away 22 years ago today, September 11th, 2002. Always, always will be remembered in these parts. And even 22 years after his passing, over 50 years since he threw his last pass, still considers one of the great quarterbacks, one of the great players in the history of the National Football League, and rightfully so, a transcendent performer. So rest in peace, John Unitas. We'll come back, talk about the current NFL, and in particular, the AFC North. Jerry Dulac talking Steelers, who are in first place after a week. Joe Dannemann, Fox 19, talking about the Bengals laying an egg at home against New England. And then Zach Jackson might have the toughest conversation of them all from The Athletic, talking about the Browns. Funhouse Trip, Nolan, come up later. Week two of the NFL season starts tomorrow, Buffalo at Miami, but let's go around the AFC North. We'll tackle the opponents, if you will. We'll start in Cleveland. Covers the Browns for The Athletic. He's been covering the Browns for a long, long time, not to make him sound old, because he's not. He's a young dude. But he's Zach Jackson. Zach, good morning. How are you feeling today?
You get older every single week covering this team.
And look, and we'll get into the particulars of what happened at home against the Cowboys on Sunday afternoon, which is obviously not what Browns fans had hoped for. But then the Deshaun Watson news coming out after another lawsuit coming his way. So it's only one week in, but are things kind of in DEFCON 2 already for Cleveland?
Well, the vibes haven't been good the whole training camp for injury reasons and for struggling to complete a pass. You know, and the vibes don't matter. You win with blocking, tackling, and completing those passes. So they didn't really do well in any of those three areas. So all of a sudden, a game in Jacksonville in about 90 degrees and 90% humidity becomes really, really important. And, you know, barring a total offensive change, I'm not sure the Browns can score enough points to win it.
Hey, Zach, the thing that was concerning is last year the defense was spectacular at home. I mean, I picked the Browns to win because I figured, you know, Schwartzy's defense, they'll be dominant the second, or, you know, at home, but they weren't.
No, they weren't. You know, they weren't awful in the first half, but, you know, the Browns got a field goal on the first drive and then got 16 total yards on their next seven possessions. They didn't get it. They got one first down in the first half. And so the defense was left on the field. The defense was put in bad spots. So, yeah, I mean, you need all three phases, and they gave up a punt return, too, that really broke the dam in the third quarter. They just, you know, they didn't get anything that they needed to do. And they needed competitive reps more than anything, and it wasn't even a competitive game. The last quarter and a half, the Cowboys just shut it down.
Now, Zach, what about the offensive line? I mean, Billy Callahan's gone, which is big. But then the offensive line, because they couldn't run it, and six sacks?
Yeah, I think some of it is game circumstance. I think some of it is the quarterback holding the ball too long, either not seeing or not trusting what he sees. But, yeah, he was making the left tackle. His previous starts had come as a backup right tackle. They had no live reps together in the preseason because they don't play the starters in the preseason. And then right tackle DeJuan Jones, who's still a promising young player. He had a tough game. He jumped off sides. Both tackles got called for those formation penalties, which you guys know about. And you get going backwards against the Cowboys and Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, those guys were all over the place. So it was a bad day to have a bad day. The offensive line was not good, but it was one of many things and probably not the top thing.
Zach Jackson covers the Cleveland Browns for The Athletic. Zach, last thing for you. You mentioned the Jacksonville game coming up on Sunday. Look, Browns did make the playoffs last season. Expectations a lot higher there. What's going on with the Kevin Stefanski meter in regards to how the fans feel about him right now?
Well, the fans are mad at Deshaun Watson, right? They're mad at a lot of things, but they're mad at Deshaun Watson because they feel like they've been fooled for the third straight year into thinking this guy can still play football, and then the news comes out the next day. So, You know, people are frustrated. This is a good team. This is a really good defense. I still think it will be. The thing is, anybody can win this division, but the Browns can't unless the quarterback gets a ton better, and we just don't have much evidence that there's any chance that happens.
Zach Jackson, appreciate your time. Good luck to the Browns, because it sounds like right now they're going to need it moving forward.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, right. Zach. There's Zach Jackson, everybody. Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato. Let's now talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Maybe they were the victim of the biggest upset of week number one. Fox 19, let's welcome back to the show Joe Daneman. And Joe, appreciate the time as always. Thankfully, I did not get into any survivor pools because I would have picked Cincinnati. They were my lock for week number one, and I would have been one and done in a big, big way. If we try to dissect the loss, what was the biggest takeaway negatively from the loss itself?
Well, I think there were two talking points when the Bengals lost in week one against New England. And one was expected, one was maybe a little unexpected. I'll start with the one that was expected. Last year, the Bengals had one of the worst run defenses in the entire NFL, and they didn't do much to upgrade their run defense. They lost DJ Reader, who was their number one run stopper. They replaced him with a pass rusher in Sheldon Rankins out of Houston, who's not necessarily known as a run stuffer. And then they tried to fix the back end, the safety room, and help with the communication and getting everybody in the right fits by bringing in Von Bell and by bringing in Geno Stone from the Baltimore Ravens. They just weren't difference makers in week one against a very predictable offense in New England. And New England ran for 170 yards, including two key first downs on the final drive to melt the clock. So that was the number one concern for the Bengals coming into the season. Would the run defense be better? It was not. And that continues to be a red flag in Cincinnati. But the other one that was unexpected that might be a red flag, not just for Cincinnati, but for a lot of people who play fantasy football, is Joe Burrow did not look like Joe Burrow. Now, Joe has a history of starting slow to seasons, so we don't know if it's just a slow start, or we don't know if the wrist is really still a problem for Joe Burrow. He wasn't aggressive. He wasn't pushing the ball down the field. He seemed jumpy in the pocket. It's the first game he's played since last November in Baltimore when he got hurt. So to see him look the way he did, which was very mortal and very un-Joe Burrow-like, that has to be the number one concern for Cincinnati fans after week one.
Yeah, and Joe, you know what's kind of concerning with that is like, I thought that, like, when they had the practices against the other teams, I thought Burrow really looked good in those. So for him not, and this first time he's been healthy, what, his whole career to start the season, maybe he just doesn't like September.
And that's a very good point, because he's never played well. In fact, he's only won one game in the first 2 weeks of a season, and now his fifth season in Cincinnati. He's 1-9. And weeks one and two so far to start his career. That's just kind of who he is and how it goes here in Cincinnati. And a lot of that goes back to your point where he hasn't had healthy training camps leading up to the start of the season. This year he had one. Now, the question is, did he actually have one? Because we've given him the opportunity multiple times in his press conferences to say his wrist feels 100%. He has not gone there. He has not said it's felt 100% yet. He says he has good days, has bad days, but he's been able to do everything you would want to see from him throughout practice. And you're right, I was there for the joint practices. The one in Chicago was a disaster, but they blamed that on the weather. But the one here in Cincinnati, when they went against the Colts in a joint practice, he looked great. He made all the throws out of the pocket, off platform, down the field. The one possession he played in the preseason, he looked fine. He threw the ball deep accurately to T. Higgins in the end zone. So it looked like Joe had checked all those boxes of being ready to go to start the season. Again, the question is it his wrist, or is it a guy who hasn't played in a real football game and been hit in nearly a calendar year, who just looked jumpy and didn't trust his offensive line and was therefore checking the ball down and not trying to push it down the field?
Where are we at with Higgins, and where did you think Chase was, like, physically, mentally, and those things in that one?
Yeah, that was the big mess of week one, was that Friday, the final day of practice before the season opener. Ja'Marr Chase spoke for the first time after holding in during training camp and was upset, was frustrated, was stressed out, and it kind of seemed to upset the mojo of the room. Now, the Bengals live on his energy and his playmaking, and when he's not himself, there's something off in the force inside the Bengals locker room when Ja'Marr Chase isn't right, and right now he's not a happy employee. And then T. Higgins popped up on the injury report with a hamstring that happened on Thursday, and now you have this team who's built on the big three of Burrow, Higgins, Chase, where Burrow may be compromised, Ja'Marr Chase isn't happy, and now T. Higgins is dealing with what's always nagged him, and that's hamstring injuries. And you can understand why week one looked the way it did. It just looked like a clunker. It looked like a team who hadn't practiced together or was ready to play, and I think all those factors together created this cocktail of chaos that happened on week one in Cincinnati against the Patriots.
Joe Dademan, Fox 19, Cincinnati. Real quick, Joe, is there such thing as a must-win game in week two as the Bengals travel to Arrowhead?
I don't think you can say that because of just how good Kansas City is, and I think most people before the season saw this one as, okay, if the Bengals get out of the first month in which they play the Patriots, Chiefs, Commanders, Panthers, if they get out of there 3-1, they're going to be in good shape. If they can get out of it 2-2 now, I think they're going to be fine for the rest of the year. So even if they do lose Sunday, I won't call it a must-win because they should have a couple of layups after they play Kansas City in week two.
Joe Dademan, Fox 19, Cincinnati Bengals at Kansas City. Joe, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yep, thanks,
there's Joe Dademan. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. No Jerry Dulac? I'll be Jerry Dulac. Hey, Jerry, since Pittsburgh's defense looked really good. Yeah, we kicked the bleep out of Atlanta. Kirk Cousins overpaid hack. T.J. Watt should have won a defensive player of the year last year. He's going to win it again this year. There you go. Here's Jerry Dulac.
How was Patrick Queen, Jerry?
I don't know. We're just going to have to. Where's Roquan Smith? It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Funhouse Trip, Nolan McGraw. News from the Nets. We're going to get back to Vinny's film breakdown of the Ravens offense. They put 20 on the board, but they left a lot of plays on the board. We're going to talk about some of the missed opportunities in the passing game. Talking about the Orioles win last night behind Albert Suarez and Cedric Mullins. I apologize to Cedric in the opening of the show because kind of thought he was washed, to be totally honest with you. But now he might be a very important part of the Orioles, maybe winning the American League East as he's starting to percolate a little bit. Two bombs last night. Adley got a big base hit with bases loaded. So Orioles half game out of first because the Yankees lost. We'll talk about that during the American League East report coming up at 1:30 here on the Fan. And then we're going to get to the defensive film breakdown. People looking a little slow, shall we say?
Yeah, because, Bob, you know what's funny is like when I was watching them at training camp, I said, this is a really fast defense, and they didn't play that way. And you know what? The only way that, you know, you're not playing fast, if you're thinking too much. And what did the Ravens have a lot of problems with?
Communication.
Yeah. So what are you doing then?
Communication breakdown. Much. Little yep. Led Zeppelin for you. NFL lunch coming up at 1 o'clock. Ravens back at practice. We'll look ahead to week two of the NFL season with Ryan Wilson from CBSSports.com. But let's bring in Nolan McGraw. Nolan, how are you feeling today? What's on your mind?
I'm doing good. Looking forward to the defense film because there were a couple moments, especially early in that game, where it felt like the Chiefs' offense were really utilizing their speed and their flashy new weapon in Xavier Worthy. And after that first touchdown, I said, man, he's going to get, you know, 15 targets today. Why would you not put the ball in his hands? You know, the Ravens couldn't even get a hand on him on that one touchdown. Of course, he scored again later. But outside of those two, didn't really do much else. A little surprised the Chiefs didn't kind of try to exploit him.
Well, Worthy had the nice reverse for the touchdown, and they kind of used him in ways to take advantage of what he does. Go routes for the touchdown, reverse, and then what was the other one? Quick screen, the one he caught?
That was the one Marlon passed him off, and there was no
safety. But I mean, they utilized, I mean, Rice was the guy. Mm-hmm. And it almost looked like Kelsey was just kind of a decoy. And they were throwing to, what, 83 or 84, that other tight end, seemed like.
Much different offense for them this year than last year. And
They looked fast, were the Ravens offensively. They looked extremely, especially that first drive, like you talked about, Norm. I mean, they were like It was like bang, 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 touchdown. Like, holy cow.
And they're going to get faster when Hollywood comes
back. Yeah, no doubt.
Right.
No
doubt. It, you know, Juju, he had maybe a target or two, but he was kind of a non-factor. Kelsey, quiet game for him.
Pacheco had his moments there, too.
Yes, he did. Things.
But you think about last year, and of course, they still win the Super Bowl, even in a year where their offense is, you know, quote-unquote weaker. This year, I mean, they keep hyping up this three-peat thing. It looks like the offense is certainly capable of getting there.
Well, the defense got turnovers and stuff. Yeah, and they made a play. Well, they really didn't make a play. I mean, it came down to that last drive or the last three plays of the game.
Save it for film.
Yes.
Diddy at 81.057 The Fan. We got time for Funhouse?
We do.
Let's do it.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
First one here from Eric in Bel Air says, losing confidence in Mike Locksley as the coach of the Terps. In that game last weekend, you're up a touchdown. You know they're going for seven late. They need one to tie. You get beat over the top like that. It's inexcusable. I just have a feeling Maryland football isn't going to take that next big step with the current coaching.
He's 6 years in.
Yeah.
And we still see the penalties on 55-yard field goals that haunt them. Billy Edwards threw a pick, which is not Mike Locksley's fault. It was a bad throw. Your kicker missed a 41-yarder, which would have been huge for them at the time. That was just a breakdown on the 77-yarder. Now, a guy had thrown three picks during that game, and he just got behind. But the last drive where they kicked the field goal, the Spartans couldn't get a stop.
No.
When he needed it. The bonehead penalties is what kills him.
So, yeah, stupid penalties.
Yeah.
This texter here says, Browns fans are hoping that the Browns can get out of the Watson contract, but I really hope they don't. That has to go down as one of the worst moves, not just in NFL history, but in sports history. They shouldn't get an easy pass here.
Yeah, we talked about it a couple of days ago. Sports history.
Yeah.
And it was a contract that, like, didn't set the bar. Remember, teams were like, what the bleep are these guys doing? Cooler heads prevailed. No, we're not giving you $240 guaranteed million. You're going to get paid, and you're going to get paid handsomely. It was a Browns move. So they tell Baker Mayfield to hit the bricks. And yeah, he played for two teams since then, but now he's found a home, to say the least, in Tampa. You think about bad contracts in sports history? Wow. I mean, baseball's loaded with them. The Orioles have had a couple of them. This might be the worst contract in sports history.
Yeah. It really could be, just because they've got nothing. They've got nothing in return for $240 million. And supposedly, Bob, I guess it was all Haslam that wanted, you know, so he can't blame anybody because he's the one that wanted to do it.
Wasn't the talk he was going to go to Atlanta? And
yeah, it was
came
like
in
a
with
dumb
all that money? Yeah.
Remember, because like a few days before that, he came out and said, Cleveland's out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they came with, he must have told him, come big or don't come at all. And they came bigger than big.
Yeah.
And the Baker stuff, in hindsight, it's hilarious.
Yes.
I mean, this is the guy that gets you to a playoff win for the first time in ages. And then plays through an injury. He didn't play all that great, but, I mean, he was playing with one arm that last year in Cleveland. Never sat out when he had a chance to easily say, I'm not 100%. I'm not suiting up. He went out there every week and played for you, and then you kick him to the curb.
Yep.
Well, look at the stats compared to Watson and stuff, and look what he's done since he's left.
He's won another playoff game.
Yeah.
He did it last year in Tampa, and they might be the team to beat in the South this year.
Well, before we hit the break here, the giveaways are continuing. We got a double giveaway today. We're going to start here with the Skillet and Seether tickets. We're giving these away all week. Wise Wednesday, that's also happening a little later in the show. But for now, Skillet and Seether, I got two tickets. They're coming to Pier 6 Pavilion on September 19th. It's coming up here soon. Tickets on sale now. Giving away a pair. I'm looking for caller number 5 at 410-583-1057.
And we've determined it's two different bands, right?
That is correct.
It's not like Donnie and Marie. It's Skillet and Seether, two separate musical entities. We'll come back. News from the Nest. We'll continue with Vinny's film study. Stay tuned for that. Midweek Money. Hopefully we're counting that by our sell time. And then we'll go to Boston with Rich Dubroff talking about the Orioles getting a big win against the Red Sox, trying to win the series tonight. And then we got the defensive film study. What in the wild world of sports was going on there in the fourth quarter with communication?
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Kell back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week, and man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season-long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.